So I'm here today, September 12th, 2025, at the International Conference on Iron Sources in Oxford, England, with Dr. Robert Welton. And so, Rob, what's your role and where do you work?
Okay, so I work at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory at the Spallation Neutron Source. We are responsible for the ion source for the machine.
Yes.
So that's first and foremost. So Okay. Our first objective in our career there is to get the source running, make it stable, and all that. On top of that, we've been developing sources beyond that point to where now we're pushing the frontier of injectors for accelerators.
Okay.
And we are getting into current ranges that we haven't been before. And when I just did give a talk on particle accelerators for these H-minus injectors, and so we're now getting to the point where the community, the ion source community, is ahead of the accelerator community.
Right, okay.
We're actually exceeding by significant margin our
Requirements needed for
yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's kind of exciting. So hopefully we get the word out. There may be other facilities that can be planned or envisioned that can leverage this new capability that we're getting.
Very cool. And then also, what's your role or title? At Oak Ridge?
Senior scientist.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
At Oak Ridge yes. National Lab.
Yeah.
And my role is being responsible for the ion source systems
okay.
and all that, together with other people there.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. And then the other thing that I've been looking at is what was your sort of career path to get there? Like, where did you go to university? And
sure.
And those sorts of things.
Yeah, I went to Georgia Tech.
Okay.
For a bachelor, master's, and PhD.
Okay, cool. So and what was your master's project and your PhD project, if you don't mind my
sure,
asking?
Sure, absolutely. I had no master's project.
Okay.
It was simply theoretical physics.
Oh, neat.
Yep.
What area, or what particular problem?
It was core classwork.
Okay.
It was kind of a...
I see.
Yeah, it wasn't like... It was a PhD preparation.
Okay.
Master's degree.
I get it. Interesting. Yep. And then how about your PhD?
So the PhD was interesting. It was really cool. I was assigned to measure cross sections on old equipment, converted mass spectrometers, and I did that for about 3 or 4 days, and I just said, I don't really see myself doing this for the next 4 years.
Okay, yeah.
So it was a very prestigious scholarship I had. It was called the Director's Research Fellowship, so it was fully funded.
Wow,
really,
nice.
The DOE, the U.S. Department of Energy, has supported my career when I set foot in college to this moment.
Yeah, okay.
So it really is an investment.
Yes.
And I feel obligated to honor that and repay that. But, I didn't want to do cross-section measurements for a lot. I did a few. We did some physical review papers on
it.
But then we became interested, or the team became interested, in multi-charged ions.
Okay.
And so then I went and I found a book by Dr. Ian Brown.
Oh, I know that book. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Physics Technology. I was right in the library. It was about this high off the ground.
Yeah.
I took it out. I opened it up. And I'm like, by God, this is what I want to do. This
Neat.
Is really cool.
Cool.
So that book inspired me, and I told them this several times.
Okay.
And to do that. So then I went from there and built the Georgia Tech ECR source, which made multi-charged ions, and produced a whole lot of science from it.
Right. Oh, wonderful. And I got first exposed to that book because Ian Brown taught an ion source course at the U.S. Particle Accelerator School, which people might be interested in know is. It's a traveling school. They go to different universities and just do it for 2 week chunks every 6 months. And you have an opportunity to take these courses because they're not often offered at, just any university.
Right.
And so that book was part of it. And did you ever go into any of the U.S. Particle Accelerator schools or maybe teach one of the classes?
I've been asked to teach many times.
Yeah, okay.
I've kind of diverted because I was busy, but I'll probably do that. The guys, so that right now what I'm seeing is I'm seeing a lot of young people in the field, right? I'm seeing a lot of brilliant young people like at Avalanche. I'm seeing especially at Los Alamos with the LAMP project. They're absolutely brilliant people, But it just seems that they lack sort of somebody that's been through building these things before.
Right. Yeah. That's which is important because you can
sort
of avoid a lot of problems.
Right?
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
at deep pace, you kind of step back.
Yeah.
No,
that's right.
Path.
Yeah, that's right. And then
so,
we've got all these young
masters
and PhDs and postdocs
and
coming
like,
through.
And I'm learning that if I interact with them, I can just say a few words and it makes a big difference.
Yes.
It's weeks and weeks. Like
that's
with the
right. Yeah. Like you say, you can be stuck indefinitely almost sometimes. But then somebody that's done it before and went through that headache, maybe a decade or 2 decades ago, it's really helpful.
So to me, it's a little tiny bit of effort on my part with a huge payoff. For that.
Yeah.
So I love that stuff.
Yeah. And thank you for, working to assist DPACE on a new sort of a, it's in a RF antenna mode to heat the plasmas in the DPACE triumphalized sources, which were to originally filament.
Right.
And you're bringing that technology in, and it's very appreciated. And then the next thing I wanted to go to was, and then where did you grow up before that?
Before that technology,
I
connected you with a private company.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And but I just sort of meant in terms of.
Yeah.
Just general guidance, right?
Yeah,
like you were saying,
absolutely.
Like, like which happens at these conferences where we just go to talk to each other and say,
absolutely.
Oh, well, you know, like you even when some of the questions, like people, how they ran their cesium on a talk by Dr. Sun
today. These discussions are the fuel that powers this innovation.
Yes, that's
for
right.
For sure, especially in these smaller sort of individual, sort of specialized fields.
Yeah.
Having a group of scientists come together that all have been through this similar career trajectory and in collaborating has been, a source of so many ideas for us over the years.
Yeah.
It's so valuable.
Yeah. And then just going to another thing, like a lot of times I like because we go to conferences all over the world and the labs and companies are all over the world. So they're all in different cultures and environments and so forth. So like where you are at Oak Ridge, what's it like to live there? What is the sort of the landscape like and that sort of thing?
Oh, it's beautiful. I lived in for when I was in Georgia Tech. I lived in the city, and I was not very happy with the big city.
Okay,
so I
love
the countryside. I love the outdoor activities.
Yes.
I love the fitness and the hiking and biking and all that kind of stuff. So, Oak Ridge is ideal for that.
It's near the Smoky Mountains or is it in the Smoky Mountains?
It's near the Cumberland Mountains,
Mountains. Okay,
It's embedded in a valley that was where when people moved west, they kind of came through the Cumberland Gap.
Okay.
And they proceeded through the Tennessee Valley because it was flat, surrounded by mountains on both sides.
Okay.
It's got pretty reasonable weather. It's humid.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll probably
It's good for growing things, I think, from
it
what I know. People
green.
Can have great gardens there and so forth.
Very green, yeah. So that was the advantage. There's mountains and so forth. And then also it has a ridge-valley structure, which made it really ideal for the Manhattan Project.
Oh, okay.
And so that's
in what sense?
Why the Manhattan Project.
No, I know. Yeah,
because you could have a relatively flat area to build stuff.
Yeah.
You could have a ridge, a mountain as shielding.
Oh, I see.
And then you could put a town there.
Okay. Yeah.
So on one side of a ridge.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. I think it's Oak Ridge. It may be another ridge.
Yeah.
But they're put Y-12, X-10, K-25.
Right.
Which are the original weapons plants for the Manhattan Project. And the other side, they put the town.
Right. Yep. Okay.
So your workers could live in the town and go there. If the whole thing blew up, well, probably a lot of them would survive.
And I was going to say also, what kind of wildlife is around there? Like it's forested. Like I just saw on your slide today, it's quite forested around there. Like,
My wife and I are big birders, so we see a lot of birds there.
Yeah.
We have deer in our yard.
Yeah.
We live out in the country on
countryside,
several acres.
Yeah.
So, and so we have plenty of deer, squirrels.
Would there be bears in the Smoky
there's
Mountains?
Not.
Yeah, some.
There's not.
Yeah.
There's
oh, there's not. Oh, okay.
No,
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
think so. Not there.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so I would say that's the main thing is birds and deers and raccoons.
Right.
And stuff
okay.
Like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then the last question I wanted to head towards is there, like going back to when you were little, I don't know if it's when you were five or in elementary school or whatever, but there's something about your character, the way you were, that you still see in yourself as an adult scientist, researcher here, that you still see in yourself? Is there something that is sort of a thread that you carry through that's sort of who you are, that you remember from when you were little?
I feel that I have a really good answer for that.
Okay.
I think my father inspired me a lot.
Okay.
So he, as I mentioned, was born in Nova Scotia and came down. And he inspired me a lot. He was very eager to nurture my curiosity.
Okay.
So when I was in, second, third grade, I had all kinds of electronic stuff in the basement.
Okay.
I had chemistry stuff.
Yeah.
I would just kind of get into these periods where I might spend, 3 or 4 months as a kid, exploring chemistry.
Cool.
And I was lucky that if it landed around a birthday or Christmas, I could get a chemistry set.
Yeah.
And I was, doing all kinds of stuff like that. And then I'd sort of lose interest in that as I kind of tapped it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'd go to the next thing. And
cool.
That was electronics. We ended up putting a long wave antenna up,
and
he was like, "Yeah, I'll help you hang it up there."
Yeah, yeah.
And so,
where did you hang it? Like on the side of the house or a barn?
We hung it. It was a big one. It was 360 feet.
Holy!
And it was from, I think he actually put his ladder on the telephone pole.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if it's legal.
Yeah, yeah.
Brought it over as a dipole antenna.
Okay.
Put a shielded cable up in the middle. This was in third grade.
Wow! Right? Amazing.
Yeah, and we brought it down into the house, and we had a piece of wood there, and we put a nail in the wood.
Yeah,
we tied that coax cable there. We grounded it and tied the cable to a nail that stuck in the wood.
Yeah,
and the other one, he said, "Well, you got to have a good ground."
Okay, yeah.
And he's not an engineer.
Yeah, yeah.
He just knows,
that. Yeah.
So we got a big grounding rod.
Okay,
we brought in a ground rod right there. So now I have a huge 360-foot antenna on one nail.
Yeah,
a ground on the other nail.
Yeah.
And if you did that, you could, for example, take a very sensitive headphone and simply put it across it.
Okay, yeah.
And with nothing else, no tuning, nothing.
Yeah.
And you could hear all kinds of radio stations. Whatever the RF power that's coupling with the antenna, you literally hear it.
Hear
you hear
it.
All the amplitude-modulated stations kind of all at once. And I was like, whoa, this is cool.
So cool.
So that started my interest in RF technology.
Wow, that's a wonderful example, too. So, Rob, thank you very much for this interview.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, you bet.
All right, nice. Yeah.